In this episode, some of our Banking with Life clients discuss their exposure to the idea that they could control the banking function with the infinite banking concept and practical experience in becoming your own banker, as taught by my late friend and mentor, R. Nelson Nash. Now, these are unscripted and in their own words, so they may not use precise language, but they took time out of their busy lives and their full schedules to come and share with you. And I thought it was very powerful. They were very complimentary of us as a team, the Bank of Life team and some of the team members, you know, Jake, Julie, Service. And I do truly appreciate that. But those were also unsolicited. I really had fun with all of these individuals, and I think that you'll enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And I have to reiterate the same thing. James is a dear friend of mine, as was Nelson Nash. I was blessed to get to know Nelson, and actually I got to be with him 3 months before his death. So even in his later years, he was already thinking about the next book project. So he was just an incredible man. So I've just been blessed with this relationship with James, his office staff, as well as Nelson and his family. So I'm just grateful to be here. My story starts somewhere around 2007, 2006. I was a board certified surgeon, as a busy surgeon, and I had a captive audience in the OR crew. So I used to listen to a lot of motivational tapes in the OR, Zig Ziglar, Dennis Waitley, Jim Rohn, all of his famous speakers. And literally one day, and I believe it was 2007, one of the nurses hands me this book and tells me, "What do you think about this?" And I looked at the book and I said, "Okay, I'll read it." So it's Nelson Nash's book, Become Your Own Banker. And I take it home and I read it and I go, this is life insurance. It's whole life insurance. It's the worst place you can put your money. I was taught my entire life, buy term, invest the difference. Never, ever, ever buy whole life insurance. So I came back to the OR and was going to give the book back to this nurse. And she said, I don't have any use for it. So I kept it. Well, within a matter of years, my hips went back bad and I needed to have a hip replacement. And the book was on the bookshelf. And while I was recovering, I was reading a lot. I said, you know, I need to read this book a second time. So I read it the second time. And you talk about a life-changing event. I was hit over the head by a 2x4. I said, you idiot. You totally missed the concept. So looking at the back cover, I knew Nelson had to be up in age. So I wondered if he was even still alive. So I got online, and literally, this is a God thing. Within a couple of weeks, he was speaking in Fort Worth, sponsored by James Nethery. So I immediately signed up, went to the meeting. I was blown away by Nelson, and I called my wife from the meeting and said, you need to listen to him. And within a couple of weeks, he was speaking in Waco, Texas. So we went down there and she was blown away. So immediately we started policies. And like James said, the first policy was too small.
I didn't say that. Yeah. But he kept expanding.
You know, I rapidly expanded to multiple policies and then kept getting bigger.
So just take us back to the very beginning, sir. Give us some background of you, why you're an engineer, how you got there, and then all the way up to how you got exposed to this idea of becoming your own banker.
Yeah, so as I was a kid, I was one of those kids, those problematic children that was always taking apart appliances in the house. And my grandmother said, this kid is something special because I could take apart the stereo system and have it back together before my parents came back home from work. As a small child, like, they learned quickly not to leave a screwdriver out anywhere around the house because I'd pick it up and get into stuff. And so that sparked a curiosity to figure out how things are come together. And when I got through high school, I thought it's an obvious thing for me is to be an engineer of some kind, because it's not too theoretical. It still requires some good problem solving, and I just love it. And then when I met my wife, we were dating, I ended up took her last name, hyphenated my name. And I always tell people the short answer to how I got engineers the last name is it involves my father. So my dad was adopted, and as a small child, I told my father I was going to change my name back to the family name once I got married. That would be like a good time to do it. And then I just got so used to it, I just kept it. And so he was super supportive of that, and we're happy with that. And as I did my research into names, James, it got me onto this whole topic of why I got interested in IBC to begin with. And it turns out that in Europe, at some point in the far, far past, last names were something that was made up by governments or local kingdoms so that the government could make sure, or the ruling party or class, to make sure that everyone paid their tax. And so it was done so that, you know, if you had two James in the same village, they got tax money from both James, and they wouldn't just stop when they got your money. They'd go to the next James and get their money as well. And a lot of European names, when translated into English, will literally translate into son of. And there's even the same is true in some of the Arabic names. And this is a phenomenon across the planet. So all last names are made up. And it was no big deal for me once I did the research to get mine fixed to what I wanted it, which just coincidentally has paid dividends for me having that last name, especially being trained as an electrical engineer and working in construction now for almost 30 years. So on that note of taxes, James, when I figured out what taxes were, and I'd been an entrepreneur and had worked a full-time job for some time now, and earlier I was started a business in California, and the California taxes, James, for a brand new business like myself were so high that it evaporated all of my profits in every year for 3 years straight in a row. And it wasn't that we didn't have a good business. It didn't scale up, but we eventually got put out of business because the taxes, I would look at what we were doing in sales through the year, and then I would look at the taxes and be like, okay, I'm going to have this huge tax bill, and we didn't sell enough. Like, we're literally just making money to pay the California government. And I said, this can't stand. So I started doing research into businesses, and I thought, I'm probably missing something. It's probably something I don't understand. And then I got, after reading some books, Amazon recommended me Nelson's book. And the cover, it's this black book that's like a workbook style size. So it's not like a regular paperback, and it's less than 100 pages. And the title has a big bank vault on the front with a combination, and it says Becoming Your Own Banker. And I thought, wow, Amazon's algorithm's amazing. They're onto something. And I read a little bit of the preview, and I got the book, read the book, and I was in disbelief the whole time. At the beginning of the book, Nelson lays down the principles that let the whole thing work. And so through narrative, it really hooked me in. But my thinking, James, in the beginning was just totally wrong. I just could not think right about this. And you know, James, he gives me a hard time because I'm such a slow learner and slow reader. I think I've read Nelson's book, you know, 15 plus times, probably approaching over 20 times now. And I've been practicing IBC for over 5 years now.
The challenge, you know, what was, you know, reading the book, you know, you're intrigued by the title, you get drawn in, and, you know, the way Nelson wrote was pretty powerful. You got very simple, very straightforward, anecdotal, pedagogical, whatever that term whatever is, a teaching are. Tool, you know, yeah. By example, you know, where was the struggle?
You know, the first thing I didn't realize, I think some of the things for me in the first readings of the book was coming to the realization that I had abdicated my responsibility for my finances. And for me, being so strong-willed, that was really hard to swallow, that I had willingly or unwillingly given up control of what happens to the cash in my life. And And that was tough. That was really tough to swallow. And it was undeniable. And, you know, in the reading, when Nelson drew the picture of the, where he's describing what money is, like the supply of money in the world is, you know, pretty much like the ocean. And he talks about creating a small harbor where water can come in and flow through your system before flowing out. That was a really eye-opening thing that I never realized. Like, I was just having money come in and I was letting other people, you know, do well with my money, like in, you know, 401k or stock market, or nobody saves, in our generation, James, nobody saves money in the bank because you don't get anything for it.
I'm a nurse. I actually, my specialty is newborn intensive care, and I've been doing that just about 27 years, so not quite 30 years, but a really long time. Really a passionate educator on anything to do with, you know, sick and small newborns. And about a decade ago, started my own consulting company specializing in baby neurology and teaching physicians and nurses how to read baby brains, MRIs, and set up different programs in their hospitals. So I travel and teach and help them to set up the best environments for families and babies to grow better baby brains from the beginning.
That's awesome. How's the travel been the last, you know, 12 months or so?
Yeah, non-existent, which has been a huge change for me over the last 20 years of really traveling the world, but gave me time to dig into these concepts. And I think that's, I guess, the hidden blessing in having a lot of extra time and not traveling and being so busy, was a chance to really reflect on where I was financially, whether or not that was with protection, just learning new concepts. And you know, I'm a lifelong learner, so it was just one of these things that YouTube brought me to here.
Well, perfect. Expand on that. You know, so you have some extra time.
Yep.
And you're reflecting on your financial position, and so you go onto YouTube, and so that's a lot of ground between then and now. So,
yeah.
You know, share with us your whole. Thought process, if you will.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, if I really reflect back, like, how did I get there? I was trying to think about that this morning. Like, I mean, it seems crazy now to even think that I didn't know about this, but there definitely was a time. I would think I was looking for some new kind of innovative strategies on how to pay off my house, like, to be honest. And I was like, should I, you know, accelerate my payments? Should I, you know, I just was kind of thinking about this as a goal, you know, something that I could try to accomplish was to pay off my house. And so then that took me down kind of this bubble, and I ran into some videos around velocity banking. And somebody in one of the videos I was watching, I got really interested in kind of understanding this difference between daily accumulating interest versus kind of our traditional mortgages, and, you know, how to leverage daily interest. And so that really, I'm kind of a math nerd, so that really, really intrigued me. And so I thought, what is this concept? So I just really started digging into that idea. And then somebody in one of the videos said, and if you really want to turn this over, you should try infinite banking. And I was like, infinite banking? That sounds kind of cool. And then I just found Nelson Nash Institute, started listening to videos there, just, you know, was watching tons and tons of videos about illustrations and how you take out loans, and literally just consumed hundreds and hundreds of hours of content. And of course, your channel was one that came and really, you know, I thought that connection between you and Nelson Nash, you know, it was just like this great synergy. And so I booked a call with you.
And I'm going to use a math nerd if I could.
Yeah, sure.
Because we had lots of phone calls. I mean, you were very inquisitive. You had a lot of legitimate, good questions, and a lot of them. And we spent some time.
Yes, we did.
You know, going through a lot of different. We deconstructed, you know, some of the ideas that really resonated. Mm-hmm. Were good ideas, but there were some adjustments that were made.
Yep.
And so I don't know. We had several calls, and then, you know, you just go through the process, and so it's, I don't know when you're first actually became a client, purchased policy somewhere.
I think it was maybe 8-9 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a good 2-3-4 months of you know, researching, double checking, you know, checking in with my partner and saying, you know, is this a good idea? Should we do this? He was a little more skeptical. I made him watch some things. I reread the book. I listened again to podcasts. I mean, I literally just, and I don't know that that's, that everybody needs to go that deep. I guess I can give a backstory on I had had purchased a universal life policy about 6 years ago. And so I like to say I had the right idea, but the wrong tool. And so yep. I already had this idea that I wasn't going to be investing in 401ks anymore. I was looking for an alternative. And so I think that I was already, you know, I was already interested in something different, but again, I felt burned by the other tools. So I think that made me more studious and more responsible this time to just really understand what I was buying, understanding the mechanisms, and to be sure that I was really confident in what I was going to do with it, why I was doing it, instead of just, this is an alternative 401k, and, you know, just trying to kick that to the curb. And I feel like that's what I probably did in the last situation. I didn't really understand how the policy worked. The other thing is that the other agent was never, ever available. And so I think that, you know, just having so many calls with you, you know, you say it on the podcast, you know, you just call Julie and you just call, but these are like real people. I mean, I know it's hard to believe when you watch it from the other side of the screen, but I mean, these are real people. You know, you get on the phone, you, James actually calls you and Julie, emails you, texts you. I mean, they give amazing customer service. So I feel like that part of it just also gave me confidence that, you know, I wasn't getting myself in another situation and, you know, just had done my due diligence. And, you know, at some point you say it's all rhetoric, so you write the check. And at some point I just decided, well, guess it's time to write the check.
So the deal was really happened because between me and my partners that we had enough capital to make it happen, right?
So they just, they appear, don't they? The opportunities will track capital down.
Right. So, but, you know, the drawback was, okay, you can deal with permitting and construction and that kind of stuff, improvements. There's always delays, right? And so...
government regulation.
You know, the unknown of, you know, how long would I have to keep this capital, you know, large sums of capital out there. And so it's... What else could it be doing? Yeah, I've only had it for a few months now. So it's... I think it was back in March is when we finalized it.
Okay. And so you've already purchased a car with an unstructured repayment schedule, but you're in complete control of that. And you are a good saver. There's no question. I mean, you're highly disciplined. You're no question. And then you're still looking at opportunities in real estate. Is that fair to say?
So this will also be a tool that can help in that endeavor.
You got to really do your homework, vetting. If someone listening wanted to continue the vetting, their vetting, you know, what would you encourage them to do? How would you, you know, convey to them to what should they do to learn, you know, more?
I mean, I think trust your instincts and logic, right? I mean, if it does, sounds to you to be true, it usually is. So keep probing, keep asking the questions, you know, work with somebody who can answer your questions, right? Not kind of steer you in this direction or that direction. And, you know, do the best you can to get educated, read the books, it's hard. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. There's so much out there. You don't know when you're fully done vetting it, right? So, and at some point, you gotta make a decision, right? You can analyze forever and forever, and then you never do anything.
Yeah. All right. So, what else would you impart with us? What would you, the listener, if they're interested in learning about the concept and vetting it, they should do their homework. Go online, videos. Buy some books.
I'd say talk to a couple of different advisors who know the concept and can help you and kind of help you fit your needs, right? And they structure the policy for your needs, not necessarily what they're used to structuring.
Yeah. But how would they know? How would someone know? You know, after a conversation, I mean, did you talk to other advisors?
Yes.
You know, while
yes.
You were looking? So, I mean, how do you know? Is somebody, you know, how does the consumer, how would they know whether someone is structuring it for their benefit or for the client's benefit?
I think, you know, when you start having the conversations and you start realizing that the agent's recommendations actually help you or open your eyes to a new way of looking at it, that actually benefits you, right? That's a good sign, right?
So what happens is, so what happened was that a number of years later, I bumped into you at a Texas Medical Association meeting. And I bumped into a physician who was using life insurance plans, and he was retired from practicing medicine and whatever. And you gave me a little soft cover book, Bank on Your Life.
Becoming Your Own Banker, right. R. Nelson Nash. Right. Yep.
And I read that book. It, you know, that's a one evening read.
Right.
And, you know, even for somebody encumbered by significant amount of education, it still only is a one evening read. And
I appreciate your comments, sir.
and it really opened my eyes. So interestingly, I took that book. I didn't take the book. I took the lesson I learned from the book, and I talked to my insurance agent. Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, can I do this with those policies that I have?" And he said, "You can with the whole life one. You might do some of that kind of stuff with the universal, but you the whole life one, you really can." I said, "Well, I mean, doing the math, I'm not saving enough money for retirement, and at the time, and I knew that, and that worried me because at some point I do hope to retire." And so I wouldn't be able to afford that. And so I got more life insurance policies. And we got life insurance policies on my wife and on my four children. Each of my four children owns their own life insurance policy. So we would gift the children money as saving, and that's something that my parents taught me.
Sure.
My parents saved college money for us by gifting us money and staying below the estate gift tax exemption limits, which has changed with time.
Sure.
And so we had our own bank account, our own custodial bank accounts that my parents controlled and eventually were handed to my siblings and to me when we were adults. And and so I did the same for my children. I created custodial accounts for them and passed on some money to them. And that was, so for my first two children, our college plan for them, we initially had a college plan for them, a 529 plan. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as I learned this stuff about these life insurance policies and I saw their power, and I didn't just see their power because I read the book.
Right.
I saw the power because I already had a policy that was performing amazingly and better than the initial illustrations.
I've been doing this now for about 6 years. We met, you know, a couple of months before that, I think 6 months before that, at a real estate conference, which was actually one of the first times that I'd actually been to a large real estate conference to learn, mm-hmm. you know, to just learn in general about different ways to look at money and wealth, right? So my better half and I, we prior to going to that conference, we had gone to Europe and had spent some time, you know, on a vacation out there and kind of saw how they looked at work and how they looked at, you know, money and that kind of thing. And
well, really, where'd you go? I love travel.
Oh, so we actually went to six different countries. We went through Great Britain. We went to France, Spain, Belgium. We went to Amsterdam, and then we went to Italy, and spent a lot of time and, you know, talking to a lot of the local folks, talking, you know, with you know, and just really kind of getting that feel of, you know, the differences in how they view work and life. And, you know, everybody talks about work-life balance and all that kind of stuff. And where you're here in America, we really, you know, we live to work, whereas they work to live. So that they have a very different view on what they need from a, you know, from a kind of a generational wealth perspective and from a, you know, how they live their lives. So they take a lot more vacations, they do a lot more travel and things of that nature. So at that time,
they eat better too.
They had some amazing meals in
not Europe. Belgium.
Well, actually some decent stuff in Belgium. But one of the best meals I ever had was in Spain. And I think it's, you know, it was one of these where they cooked it in a 300-year-old oven and, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was amazing. But really came back from that trip with really a different mindset. So she and I, you know, we have very stressful jobs. We still have very stressful jobs, and we spend a lot of time in our work life and our career life.
Can I ask what you do?
We're both in the medical field. Okay. I'm specifically in the pharmacy claims side of things. So I spend a lot of time helping members and pharmacies, you know, with the benefits that they
can need. I get some hydroxychloroquine?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm not on that side anymore.
How about ivermectin? Do I need to go to the food store for that? I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So very, you know, from a career perspective, we have a, you know, we've been very focused on our career, very focused on, you know, that life. So taking that vacation and coming back really changed our minds of how we want to live. You know, and we started putting together, you know, kind of thinking about, well, what does retirement look like for us? I mean, we're in our 40s. We're looking at, you know, are we where we want to be? Do we have the tools in place? Those kind of things. So, and at the end of the realization, I think a lot of us get to this realization is, well, number one, the 401k isn't going to get us there. We have some savings, you know, from that perspective that's out there, but we need some. We needed something else, so that's why I went to this. You know, kind of went to this real estate conference. Started, you know, because you hear everywhere, real estate's the way to make a lot of money, and you know, easy to get to retirement and all that kind of stuff. And it makes more millionaires than everything else. So, went to a conference, learned. You know, sat through a lot of different presentations. One of the presentations that I sat through was this one around infinite banking, which you hosted.
Thanks for sitting through.
And I think it was one of your kind of earlier presentations, because it, you know, but as I was sitting there listening to it, there were certain things that started to resonate with the idea of, well, number one, being in control and not having, you know, and building something that you have control that you can pass on generationally. Mm-hmm. And if you teach your children and your grandchildren how to, you know, how to utilize the concepts, like it can be passed on for generations after generations. That really resonated. The idea of having a system or a way that you could put money into something and then still utilize that money, and the system still thinks that the money's there, was kind of an interesting concept, because there's not many things outside of, you know, kind of like home equity or things like that where it builds value that you can access in different ways. So that really resonated, and then it kind of fit into our overall plan. So when we came back from Europe, we started looking at a 10-year plan. That was our 10-year. So we said, okay, we love what we do from a career perspective. I have a very stressful job, still love what I do. But in 10 years, can I be in a place where if I want to walk away from corporate America, can I walk away from corporate America? And that was kind of the goal was, okay, what do we need to get set up? What do we need to look at? What tools do we need to put in place in order to, you know, have that ultimate goal that if we want to go work for ourselves, we're comfortable to work for ourselves. If we want to step away from corporate America, we can do that. We're not going to probably ultimately retire because we're still young and able to work and that kind of stuff and like to work. But what does it look like for us for that 10-year journey? And when we started looking at that, we started looking at different tools. And I have what I call my chess versus checkers type way of looking at finances. The checkers kind of stuff is the short term, easy to make moves. So like, and I put kind of debt, like consolidating debt, paying down debt, things of that nature that are short term things in kind of that chess or in that checkers type. You know, can we call the you know, the phone company and lower this bill? Can we lower the cable bill?
Pretty simple.
The simple, easy stuff, yeah. Right? Then I have my things that I call the chess moves, which are the bigger, long term that require a commitment. And I look at the infinite banking concept as being one of these chess moves. So it's one of these things. It's a foundational component of our financial plan and our 10-year plan. But it is also something that, number one, it takes a commitment. it takes a little bit different mindset of thinking at looking at the money and how that money works. And and you know, when you and I first talked, we started talking about like kind of the, you know, the cost for the policies and how we put things in there. Like, that's a kind of a big pill to swallow. I think sometimes it's, you got to wrap your head around, well, how does that work and what is the value of it and what do you get from it and how does it force you to save and how does it build value and how does it, and how can you then utilize it? So you have to have a, you know, really a mindset or a different way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So when I looked at this concept, it made, there were a lot of tenets that made a lot of sense to me. But then, you know, it took a little bit of you know, some of our conversations. It took some reading. It took some looking at things, you know, to kind of get my mind wrapped around it. And then even once I was in it and I started funding my first policy.
Writing those checks, huh? Yeah.
Even if I started funding that first policy and actually moved some of my savings into the policy, it then took a while to kind of then start to figure out, like, how do I really use this thing? And I mean, I've taken, you know, I've done some policy loans and that kind of stuff, and we actively use my policy, moving money in and out of it and doing different things with it as opportunities come up or as we look to, you know, move our path along on this 10-year plan that we're on.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.